Yes, this is Rex Rural Exchange Radio Live right across the country. Hamish Mackay and Sarah Perriam in the Auckland studio in Christchurch. I thought he might have done a bit of a jig to that,
but
you know, he's there. Richard Lowe, good morning.
Good morning, you too.
Are you well, sir? Have you had a great week, Lowey?
I've had a very, very good week. Even that we tripped to see you people yesterday was
always good to catch up with you. And you put a few merinos out the porthole as well, some big horny guys, so to speak.
Personally, I didn't, but we finished the shearing this last week. But then, of course, that was the one fine day, and I think we've had a good 100 mils plus. Some places in North Canterbury a wee bit more.
And you turned into a bit of a photographer during the week too. I saw one beautiful shot looking out. Where does the mansion sit?
On the banks of the Waimea.
On the banks of the Waimea.
Into the Tallest Range.
So is that sort of looking towards the ski fields?
Yeah, straight out the front window. You can see Porters. Sometimes you see the snow turn around at night.
Yeah.
And then you look out to the left and you see Mount Hutt.
Right, okay. Big day today, everybody. Of course, we can't really talk. We're not allowed to talk about what it's a big day, but we're not allowed to talk about it. We know what it is about. We can encourage you to go and do something. You should have a little card to go with that and go and find a booth near you and do that. But we won't be talking exactly about what the big day is. This is Rex Rural Exchange Radio Live. Right, let's get into it. Rural news.
Rural news with Farm Source, your one source for better productivity this spring.
Dairy NZ, the Dairy Companies Association of New Zealand, and the Ministry for Primary Industries this week endorsed the Dairy Declaration of Rotterdam, marking New Zealand's commitment towards global sustainable dairy development. The declaration signals both a commitment towards feeding the world with safe and sustainable products and enhancing sustainability. We're pleased to endorse the declaration as a signal of strong support for the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and for the important role of the dairy sector in the global community's effort towards sustainable development, says Kimberly Cruther, Executive Director of DCANS. Cruther says the declaration highlights many areas where the dairy sector can support the achievement of its sustainable development goals from an economic, social, environmental and health perspective, which she says are all priorities for New Zealand. Invercargill-based Alliance Group has acquired Gold Kiwi Asia, a Singapore-based marketing and sales company, as the meat company seeks to capture more value from its markets in Asia. Chief Executive David Surveyor says the new business will be known as Alliance Asia. He says the acquisition represents an important step in the company's vision to create a stronger cooperative to benefit its 5,000 farmer shareholders and staff. This will ensure we are now closer than ever to our Asian customers and end consumers with our new Asian headquarters in Singapore, connecting us to some of the world's largest populations and their growing demand for quality food, Surveyor says. Dairy NZ has developed an app called EnviroWalk, which it says will make it easier for farmers to assess their fertiliser use, effluent, waterways, races, cropping, water use and irrigation, and create an action plan on their smartphone. About 1,500 farmers have already downloaded the free app since it was launched in July. Dairy NZ's Adam Duca, who led the development of the app, says farmers are always looking for ways to improve their environment. We wanted to make it easy, as easy as possible for them. He says the app has a series of yes-no questions to help farmers identify areas on their farm that have opportunities to do things differently and get better environmental outcomes. Depending on the answers to the questions, the app suggests solutions or actions. These form the basis of the action plan, which can be downloaded, printed and updated at any time. And the pastoral sector is reacting to negative news reporting and comment rather than being proactive in talking about its vision for water quality in New Zealand, claims Beef and Lamb NZ Chairman James Parsons. He says when you are always reacting, it is always coming across as defensive when you are trying to bat off accusations. Parsons was commenting on the thinking behind the Swimmable Rivers Pledge by farming leaders, including himself. He says what the pledge is about is talking to the public of New Zealand, not just the farming community, the majority of whom are aware of the great work going on to try and improve water quality. Parsons says the farmers' pledge was really to start having a dialogue with the public of New Zealand and let them hear farmers' vision, who he says are very much on the same page as the public of New Zealand. And that's your latest rural news. I'll be back with more in half an hour.
Rural news with Farm Source, your one source for better productivity this spring.
Radio Live, Rural Exchange, otherwise affectionately known as Rex. We do it Saturday and Sunday morning, 5 till 7 a.m. right across the country. Of course, water quality has been one of the hugest topics in our short history on the show here. And Canterbury is a region that is highly dependent on water for its agricultural output. However, in the past few years, as water quality issues in the region have become a talking point, farming in general is taking a lot of criticism for these problems, especially as irrigation has become more prevalent. What many of the critics and media headlines never talk about is the huge amount of collaborative work and effort that's been put in by farmers, the regional council and other community members in the Water Zone committees throughout Canterbury. We're joined by ECAN councillor David Cagle to discuss the work the regional council and the community are doing to improve the region's water quality. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Talk us through these water zone committees in Canterbury. Why were they set up and how do they work?
They were set up starting 6 or 7 years ago. We've got 10 of them. So we've divided the Canterbury region into 10 zones. Canterbury's the largest of the regional councils in area terms across New Zealand. You could think of them as catchment committees, although many of them actually include several different river catchments. There are about a dozen people on each of them, so the regional council itself has one rep on each of the committees, as do the relevant district councils. So Timaru, Ashburton, Christchurch City, Horonui, sometimes more than one, depending on the boundary of the committee, obviously, the boundary of the zone. Ngaitahu are represented on all of the zone committees and make a very useful and important contribution. And then there's around half a dozen community members, sometimes shoulder-tapped. These days we advertise for people who are interested. And we try and select a balance, but we're making a selection. So they're not elected by the community. They're appointed by the district council and ECAN jointly.
David, Richard here. Where do you think farmers sit at the moment with the good management practice, environmental plans, etc., and the way they're using their farm portal?
Okay, so the farm portal, let's start with that, is just an electronic tool. It's the way you interface with a piece of software that ECAN runs. It's basically a way of using the Overseer software tool that was invented some years ago by the fertilizer industry and MPI and the government, Crown Research Institute. We use Overseer to calculate the amount of nitrate and sometimes phosphorus that's lost from a particular farm. It can be a bit rough and ready. It works better as an average taken over several years. There's lots of issues with it, but it's the only tool that enables us to make a calculation at the level of an individual farm. And I'm pleased that most farmers have got on with the business of using Overseer and got past the fact that it wasn't invented as a regulatory tool, which indeed it wasn't. Now, what our portal does is it modifies Overseer as if a farm was following the good management practices that a number of industry groups have defined for us. So a couple of years ago, we finished off a three-year project with Irrigation New Zealand and Federated Farmers and Dairy New Zealand and the pork industry and sheep and lamb and so forth, defining what were, in their view, good management practices for farmers to follow, good use of irrigation, good use of fertilizer and so forth. And now we've modified Overseer to take account of those practices, and we are in the concluding stages of putting in force rules that would reflect those practices.
Are the regulations set up to be fluid as new science comes to light?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when we went through that GMP defining exercise with industry, we agreed this was not going to be the last word. Science and indeed the practices themselves were highly likely to evolve. So just to give you one example, as I understand it, Overseer doesn't yet recognise that plantain as a food source for cattle causes the cattle to leach much less nitrate than a conventional grass and clover sward would. That's a good example of a change, a practice that could make a very significant difference to nitrate loss that isn't yet reflected in the agreed industry standards, but I'm sure in time will be.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
That is David Cagle, Ecan Councillor there, and some in-depth thoughts around, of course, the whole water situation across the wider Canterbury area. Speaking of Canterbury, let's go down to one of their finest, Low. We're going to talk a bit of sport. Mate, have you noticed that this coming up after the break, we're going to talk a bit of sport. Have you noticed that much about this Parker Fury thing going on? It's just oh dear. Anyway.
I think if you wanted a seat, you'd get it fairly quickly, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's not like they're hugely in demand by the sound of it up there in Manchester. This is Joseph Parker, who's a fine young man, taking on this Huey Fury. Man, you don't want to look into his eyes too long. Anyway, we'll talk more about that sport after the break. What have we got to give away? Loey says she got given a gift. See, we've got a giveaway on the show here.
Yeah, send me lots of gifts.
What's
great.
It called? A whistle and pop. Did you get one? So we won't overdo it.
No, we didn't. No. But Sarah can't even use the damn thing. Well, so
yeah,
you
exactly.
know, he goes on about being from the rural.
Yeah, farmer. She can't use the whistle. Got a name on it, and can't even use it.
You don't even know that. So my beautiful friend Becky Murray, Nee Murray now at Hayman, beautiful sterling silver whistle
sterling silver
on a lovely
whistle.
Rope with my name Perium on it.
That's very nice.
So
very
anyway,
nice,
we've
but
got
we
another.
Don't. We can't
so
under
what
the.
What do you want that for, Sarah?
Yeah, under the Broadcasting Official Act, you can't accept gifts. You have to return it, unfortunately.
I know that was from my friend to me personally.
Oh.
in regards to...
Oh, so why mention it?
Yeah, exactly.
We do have one to give away today. So text dog. As in dog whistle, to 3920. So it's a beautiful piece of jewellery valued at nearly $200. So
dog to 3920. That's
yeah, to
Rex.
Go in the drawer.
Yep, okay. Text dog to 3920 to win the sterling silver dog whistle and pop dog whistle. It is 5:18 on the show. When we come back, we're going to have a bit of banter around sport as we do. Coming up also this hour, we're going to talk to Roland Zimba. Roland's an association with the great team from Pioneer Seeds. We're going to have a bit of a chat to Roland, all about paddock preparation for cropping. And then Terry Lee. Terry Lee is the Managing Director of Milk New Zealand. That's Pengjing, isn't it? Shanghai Pengjing. There's been some interesting chat about them when things were a bit dicey around the time that they took over a lot of the crafers. Then things have changed, but that's not being reported, is it?
Well, we'll talk to Terry.
We'll talk to Terry Lee. And also coming up next hour, Matt Crowther is the GM for Wagyu for First Light Foods. So an interesting chat there, Perium, with your lovely little whistle there. And something that you're really looking forward to. Tell us about that. Tell us about that next hour.
Oh, well, you see, for this lovely day that is today, I thought...
Don't mention the war.
No, well, I just thought let's lighten things up and have some live music.
Some live music in the show. I love that idea. The don't mention the war. Sorry, I should because of your age. I should mention that one of the greatest British comedies of the 70s, and I'm sure Lowy's all up to speed on, was a program John Cleese called Fawlty Towers. There's a famous episode where there was some guests, you could say, from mainland Europe. I won't mention which country because we're very PC in this country and I might be accused of all sorts of things. But basically the punchline of the whole show was don't mention the war. Anyway, so we can't mention that big event that's happening today, but we can encourage you to vote. It is 5:20 here on Rex Rural Exchange. Text Rex to 3920 and we'll get all the information back onto you how to get in contact with us and this awesome. I love it. I'm just jealous. The sterling silver whistle, the whistle and pop, and that text dog to 3920, that is seriously cool. I've got to say, just a little green-eyed about what Sarah Perium has. Back shortly. 5:23 here on Rex Rural Exchange Radio Live. Next hour, we're going to be talking to Dame Jenny Shipley, Director of Genesis Energy These Days, all about that. Of course, we can't talk to her about anything else today because of certain rules and regulations around that. So if you're sitting at home thinking we're a bunch of numpties and not talking about that big thing that's happening today across the country, then that is the rules and that's why not. Right now, though, time for a little bit of...
The Sports Wrap with AFCO New Zealand Limited. Kiwi to the bone.
Hello, Huey Fury. God, he's a piece of work to look, isn't he? I mean, when those eyes get going, I tell you what, I wonder what he's been on. I don't know. Gee.
I tell you what, he's reasonably bad. What about the old man? He's been on something.
Yeah, and then there's our David Higgins from Duco as well, who's an interesting character to see.
He's on something.
Hey, dear, don't go casting all sorts of, you know, what's the word? Aspersions. Joseph Parker, though, looks pretty good, doesn't he? Like Joseph, he's a good lad.
I think...
Yeah, he does it well. He promotes himself well. Yeah. He doesn't talk the crap like a lot of the boxers do. Yeah. And like you said, he needs to get in the ring and do the talking with his fists.
Yeah.
How scary is relax, little boy? That's not. It's not like the last boxing match in terms of the banter.
Yeah. He's just. He's on something, isn't he, Huey Fury? Gotta be. It's not life. He's not on the drug life, is he?
He just might be scared.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, righty, okay, Melbourne Storm are through to the grand final against after thrashing the Broncos 30-0. Roosters or the Cowboys to come up there. Bit of Mitre 10 Cup action last night, Lowy. The mighty green and whites, you would have watched that fully in length, 34-25 over Northland. Very happy about that result.
Yeah, they pulled away last night. Yeah. It was touch and go there for a while, but yeah. It's good to see the Bucketheads have won. It's also good to see the Northlanders performing this year under Darren Whitcomb.
Yeah, they're doing a good job. Both two good sides last night. Good game in the middle too. Off to the All Blacks, of course, off to Buenos Aires. I see Dags out for the season. Moody, Franks. Now, quite a few of them, isn't there? And then Barrett's recalled. I wonder how he felt about that, Lowy. I mean,
it must have crept up on them, did it?
What's that?
The reason Sopawanga is staying at
well,
home.
Well, yeah, I mean, the reason, you know, because it was a feel like partners having baby, that's reasonably well in the diary, isn't it? Yeah. I guess it must have been, it could have been, look, I'm not.
I wonder if he forgot to tell Shag.
Oh, okay.
But in terms of, you know, you just carry on, don't you? You don't, yeah. You by your wife's bedside when you have children, that's important.
Is that how it's done,
yes.
Lowy?
Yes,
Sarah's now giving us all her life experience about what that moment's like.
My morals and values.
What that moment's like.
Don't tell us what Bob and your mother did all the time.
Yeah. Oh, but you know.
So any man that's lining up to marry Sarah Perry one day down the track, you know that you're going to have to be bedside at that particular moment.
I mean, it's just standards.
Is it? Is it standard or standards?
But yeah, if he's not playing because he's doing that, then that's completely understandable. Isn't
well, it? No, everybody, no, nobody questions the reason. That's fantastic. Of course he does. But it's just the fact that it kind of just emerged quite late in the piece.
Yeah. He forgot to diarise it.
Yeah, it just wasn't there for the All Black coach to see. 5:27 here. On Rex Rural Exchange right across the country. Talking cropping preparation shortly with our man Roland Zimba. He's an interesting lad. Good to have him as part of the Rex crew as well. Thank you, Richard. Young man, always good to have you as part of the show too. That voice of authority there bringing you the latest rural news and headlines as he rolls his eyes at Mackay as he walks out of the studio. Anyway, okay, coming up next, Richard Zimba is going to be joining us on the show. We've got a cool thing coming up later on too with a guy called David White, who is the director producer of the documentary Meat. That is apparently definitely worth looking out for. That's coming up. It's bang on 5:30. This is Rex Radio Live every Saturday and Sunday morning, 5 till 7am, right here on Radio Live.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Radio Live Rural Exchange with the great team at Pioneer Seeds. And, of course, we're talking Pioneer Seeds. Why wouldn't we talk cropping? And from Genetic Technologies in Cambridge, key account manager there is Roland Zimba, who joins us on the show. Great to have you here, Roland.
Thank you.
But wet down in the Waikato, apparently.
Oh, it is absolutely wet. We have had more rain than you can even dream of.
Right, so we're going to talk about some key tips around ground preparation for cropping and the importance of achieving the correct depth. I've got a bit of a story about not achieving the correct depth, which goes back many years, but I might share it. And providing good seed and soil contact for optimum planting. Roland, why is ground preparation so important in cropping, and what's the industry recommended best practice?
So in terms of achieving maximum potential yields, you want to make sure that when you put your crop in the ground, that crop has got a good early start, because that's the only basis that crop needs if you want it to achieve maximum yields. And for that good early start to occur, you must have a good seedbed preparation, because a good seedbed preparation will allow that crop to be able to access moisture as well as nutrients without any limitation.
What's changed in the way of best practice in terms of land preparation?
If we go back to, say, maybe 25, 30 years ago, our focus was largely most to control weeds as well as to incorporate residues from the previous crop. But over the years, we have had some good weed control herbicides introduced, as well as some great tillage tools and harvesting tools that are capable of managing the residue. So the focus has now changed to just having to prepare a good seedbed so that we give our crop a good start.
Okay, the importance of getting ground ready for, so you mentioned the wet weather, it's right across the country. What should farmers be keeping in mind leading into planting?
So obviously it has been quite wet this season, and the danger with that is some people will probably or are probably getting frustrated because they want to till their paddocks in preparation for planting. But what I would say is at this stage we don't really know what is going to happen, because no one can predict what the weather is going to do. But the only recommendation I have is that whatever happens, you don't want to rush in and work your soils when they're still wet, because if you did that, the damage that you will cause to that soil will take years to fix. So you're better off just going in, waiting patiently until your soil conditions are dry enough, and go in and plant your crop.
Does it have any effect, you know, in terms of everything being focused very much on environmental footprint and our regulations now in terms of what we're doing with our soil? But if you have poor ground preparation, does that mean that down the track we're going to have to use more fertiliser to bring it back up in terms of more herbicides and things, and because it wasn't planted when the soil was right rather than when we were ready to plant it?
Yes, so doing things wrong has got so many implications. Most of them I won't even be able to predict, because some of them we actually don't know. But the bottom line is, if you have conditions like what we have now, the dangers of going in and working the soil is you're going to compact your soil, you're going to pug your soil, you're going to create situations that will result in some soil losses or sediment loss. You're going to create situations that will cause some nutrients to be lost into waterways. So you don't really want to be in that situation. And in terms of whether you end up having to apply more nutrients or more chemicals, it's a difficult one to actually say, because once you have damaged your soil, you have reduced your potential, and what that does is your plants are no longer in a position to be able to extract the nutrients or the water without any limitation. So you may end up having to use more nutrients than what you normally would.
Knowing a few agronomists as mates of mine, everyone has one passionate product in the Pioneer Seeds range. What's your one thing that you're most passionate about?
I grew up growing maize. I grew up eating maize. I grew up breathing maize, and maize is the only product that I love the most. We have got a range of products. We also have lucerne, we also have sorghum, but maize is probably the product that I would choose if I was asked to choose one.
Okay, a bit of advice for the maize growers then. It's wet, they can't get onto land to work their paddocks up. they have to wait. Do they choose another cultivar? What would you, if they're going to be a month later in their planting, have they got a cultivar choice?
So that's a tricky one again, because at the moment we don't really have any knowledge as to what the weather is going to do. I've actually done some work myself the last few years on that subject in particular. Previously, we used to believe that the window to achieve maximum yields with maize was quite narrow. But what I found with my study is that that window is quite large. It's quite huge. We can still plant maize maybe up to November or even December, depending on where you are at. So it's actually early days to be talking about changing hybrids. I wouldn't even be looking at changing hybrids at all. It's still too early.
Great advice there from Roland Zimbrook. Great to have you here, Roland. Tell us a bit about your background, because that's a familiar name. We think back to the 1987 Rugby World Cup, and in particular, Richard Zimba was one of the stars, came here with the Zimbabwean team. Are you connected?
Absolutely. So Richard and I are cousins, and I don't know whether you know Kennedy Zimba as well. He's Richard's brother. We are related.
And I take it you don't do the same somersault as he did and injured his shoulder that tournament.
No, my focus is maize. I don't usually do rugby.
Maize, not rugby. And you studied, well, you came out and studied at Massey?
Yeah, so I did some studies back in Zimbabwe before I came over, and I completed my PhD at Massey.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
There you go. That is our man Roland Zimba there with Pioneer Seeds talking crop paddock preparation. 5:40 here on the show. They're going bark, bark for the dog whistle, aren't they, Sarah Perriam?
It's going gangbusters. It's cool seeing who's all up and texting in. Paul at Hawke's Bay, Sonia Cambridge, Stacey Leaston, all across the country texting in dog to 3920 to go in the draw, put your name and where you're from as well.
Dog would love a dog whistle. My dog would learn to listen. Like that, that's fingers crossed from Shirley. Shirley is in Matata. Matata, whereabouts is that? Come on, there's a question for you, Arlo. Where's Matata?
Pass on that one.
Matata.
I'll Google it, but Matata, tell us.
I thought it was Bay of Plenty Coastal.
Oh, Sarah should know.
Sarah's going to do it for us right now. Yeah. I thought Matata was Bay of Plenty Coastal, but I could be completely wrong on that. Sort of like, you know, just along between sort of Mount Maunganui and Whakatane.
Yes.
In there somewhere.
Norwest of Whakatane.
Ah, there you go, Matata. Mackay's onto it. 5:41. Thanks, Shirley. You're definitely in the running for one of these fabulous dog whistles. Righty-ho, you can text your name and address and the word dog to us here to 3920 for that. 3920, and we'd love to hear your story. Shirley has the dog that one day may listen, learn to listen. Fingers crossed. Okay, still to come before 6 o'clock, we're going to be hearing from Terry Lee. Now, Terry Lee is the Managing Director of Milk New Zealand. Of course, better known, I guess, for all the Shanghai Pangjin. There's some good stories around that, some good news around that, some sort of pretty murky stuff when it was all sort of originally reported. They sort of took over those Crafer farms, which were, to be fair, a bit of a disgrace, weren't they? Anyway, 5:42 on the show. Next hour, some great stuff too. Going to be talking to Dame Jenny Shipley, Director of Genesis Energy these days. Also, a good news story. Not a good luck story, because you make your own good luck. Jiva out of Hawke's Bay, a company selling some, the deer velvet products in the skincare and pet health supplement area into China. So going to be talking to Josh Buckman next hour, and David White, really looking forward to this. To be fair, David doesn't present as somebody from the land.
A typical farm boy.
He doesn't, but he's very much loyal to his roots, and has done this awesome documentary called Meat, which has had all sorts of reviews from all sorts of different groups. I think, Sarah, that's the key thing that we, the way it's been interpreted right across the board. Interesting.
It's interesting because it's this matter of fact. It's the reality of how we farm sheep and beef. He goes to a pig farm and a chicken farm. But it's interesting he says about how he's had great reviews from vegans saying everyone needs to go and see this, and he's had great reviews from farmers saying everybody needs to see this. So it's probably the most balanced journalism I've seen for a while.
There you go. In this space, we like it, and it will be in our space between 6 and 7, closer to 7 o'clock this morning here on Rural Exchange Rex. So we got Richie from Napier Road down there in Palmerston North. Love the show. Thanks, Richie. Good on you. And Simon Hardy is calling from Strathmore in Wellington, into the city. We'll work it on some urban children. I think that's good. Simon, you're right up there at the moment. And this is from Colin in Ashburton. Would like to use it on his Jack Russell. Has a mind of its own. They tend to, don't they, those little snappers, those little Jack Russells. So great response to our giveaway this morning. And also, just tell me what it is again, because Lovey, Sarah's got the A-plus version.
I do, my own engraved version. I'll work on it, one for you. And Lowie doesn't actually need one, because you whistle
because he's so
out.
Bloody ferocious anyway. Yeah,
You either use a dog whistle or not, but those that wear a dog whistle or have a dog's whistle around their neck with their name on it that can't even blow the bloody thing.
Yeah, well, that'd be the thing, though, Lowie.
She walked around yesterday. How do you blow into this?
It's jewellery. Thank you. Valued at $200.
How would it look around the eastern bays of Auckland with the local real estate guru?
They wouldn't know what the hell you're
I reckon, it, Sarah Perriam, I could probably cut you into the action because I reckon
Grady, producer Grady,
he's not liking it, and I think he's a very grounded man, our Grady, and I would trust his judgment.
Why don't you lend it to Grady for the week to wear around Greater Auckland? And get some feedback, people think of it.
Okay, all right, we will.
Rightio, Lachlan is milking in the Mighty Manawatu too. Go the turbos, he's in for the dog. I'm sensing this very sort of central North Island Manawatu too, Hawke's Bay, through to the Bay of Plenty, sort of dominance. Come on, South Islanders, get texting. If you want this dog whistle, text a dog to 3920, because right now it's the cross the Mighty Manawatu too that is dominating this part of the show. 5:45. Talking next up, we're going to be talking to our man, Mr. Terry Lee, Managing Director of Milk New Zealand.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Radio Live Rural Exchange. Well, Milk New Zealand is the operating arm of Shanghai Pengjing and Hunan Dakang in New Zealand. It's one of the largest dairy farm groups in the country. MNZ manages now 29 farms, milking 26,000 cows on about 12,000 hectares, producing around 10 million kilograms of milk solids each year. The company owns and operates 16 farms in the central North Island. 13 of them are in the Canterbury region. Earlier this month, the company launched a collaboration between it and the Chinese online company Alibaba that will see New Zealand fresh milk exported and sold to Chinese consumers. Milk NZ, Milk New Zealand's Managing Director, Terry Lee, joins us to discuss this and more about the company. Terry, tell us more about the history of Milk New Zealand and the operation it runs here in New Zealand.
So Milk New Zealand was established 5 years ago, and we are the operation arm for Pengjing in agriculture in New Zealand. Majorly, we are dairy farmers, but we are dairy exporters as well. Last year, we export about 2,600 containers of value-added dairy product to China.
Terry, in regards to the company and the acceptance of a Chinese-owned company here in New Zealand running farms, how have you found that in recent years?
We experienced very low milk price in the last 2 years. It was a big challenge, but we survived. And we are confident that New Zealand dairy farming business will have a very good future.
So just on that, your acceptance, I mean, you've come in and you've taken over, a number of the Crafer farms, and you still seem to be linked to that. Is there a good news story that we as New Zealanders are not being told about what Shanghai Pengjing is doing in this country?
Yes, when we but the farms, that the farms was in a very bad condition. We made about 23 million New Zealand dollars as the reinvestment and bring the farms into very good conditions, and the dairy farms looks very different from what it was 5 years before. For example, we have established about 300 kilometers of fence to protect rivers and waterways.
There's some good stuff happening there, Terry, but we're not hearing about it in mainstream media because I don't think it's a convenient story to tell, the good work that you're doing around waterways, around housing for staff and all those things that are happening. I have met you previously when you spoke at a Rotary meeting, but look, tell us about talk us about the collaboration, the work that you're doing with Alibaba and sending fresh milk to China and how this will work.
Yes. The initial idea is that we need to add more value on New Zealand dairy products. We have the best farmland, we have best cows, we have best dairy farmers in the world. But unfortunately, our dairy export price was dominantly low because we produce a lot of commodities rather than value-added consumer products. We're trying to build a different model. So we start from UHT milk, then we do milk powders in sachets and cans. We make Manuka honey dairy powder, and we also deliver new product like fresh milk. You know, Chinese people is very keen to have New Zealand dairy product in fresh.
Mm.
So this is a very... it will be a very interesting way to promote New Zealand fresh milk because we target super members in Alibaba.
Okay, Terry, talk us through how this will work, you know, the fresh milk going into China. It leaves New Zealand from leaving the cow to getting to the consumer in China. What sort of time frame are we talking?
Let's start from the farm. When we milk the cow very early in the morning, around 4 a.m., then the milk was stored in the fridge and then transported to a dairy factory, Green Valley. So Green Valley processed the milk, and the milk was milk will be transported to Auckland Airport on the same day, and it will fly to China. And four or 5 days later, the fresh milk will be on the table of China consumers.
With regards to the price, that if premium price to achieve, but you're also going to have higher expenses with air freight, what type of price are you achieving in China for fresh milk over a commodity product?
Yes, that's far more better than commodity. For example, when we give the price discount to Alibaba super members, it is 79 RMB for 2 liters of milk. It's about $8 per liter.
Wow.
And for other members, ordinary members, the price is 139 per bottle. That's far much better than commodity dairy powder. And during this process, we add a lot of value, not only on milk, we add value on the whole supply chain. And we increase the GDP, and we increase the export receipt, and we increase the tax. And all this live in New Zealand.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
That is Terry Lee, the Managing Director of Milk NZ. So some interesting stuff happening in that space for sure. But certainly, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think they put in and spent some, put their money where their mouth is in terms of improving those properties that they've definitely taken over. And interesting to see how they're getting this fresh milk into the Chinese consumer. 5:56 here on Rex Rural Exchange Radio Live. Right across the country, Hamish McKay, Sarah Perriam on coffee duty. Richard Lowe with me in the Christchurch studio. Let's have a look at this. We've got this wonderful giveaway this morning, the Whistle and Pop. It's a cool, very cool whistle, the dog whistle giveaway. So we have got, who have we got here? We've got Carol from Brightwater and Nelson, has two German Shepherds. We love to have the dog whistle to help with them. A younger one runs for miles, and I seem to be yelling at her all the time to come back. Okay, Carol, you are in the hunt there. We have a 10-month-old Jack Russell. Comes only when I whistle, when I call him by the name. He's called Nico, and this is from Erica, and she's in Papatoetoe. So thank you, Erica. Susan in Ealing, Canterbury, Main South Road, Ealing. Dairy farmer with a German Shepherd who would love to hear the sound of the dog whistle. And Giselle in Motueka, sheep and beef farmer, needs the dog whistle for the border collie. As he disappears over the hill horizon on his own mission sometimes. But like you, Loey, do you disappear over the hill on your own mission sometimes? Yeah. Exactly. A man needs his own space, doesn't he? That's what it's all about. Don't forget, daylight saving tonight, Loey. The old clock, spring forward, fall back. So put the clock forward. Earlier start tomorrow morning for us. Yeah, weird, exactly. I wonder if she remembers to put one sugar in my coffee. Election coverage tonight. Make sure decision tune in. Decision 17 across TV3 Radio Live and News Hub Online. The Radio Live election special, Mark Sainsbury, Chris Trotter, and Night Talk host Mitch Harris. TV3's coverage tonight, Duncan Garner, Patrick Gower, and Lisa Owen will be fronting there. And after our show tomorrow, Ryan Bridge hosts your Sunday special that we pack with guests, including the winners, the losers, and experts to help put everything into perspective. Big day, we don't talk about it, but we will say go and have your vote, have your say. Remarkable turnout so far. Standing by now, news and sport, top of the hour, 6 o'clock. Coming up after 6, talking a little bit of Wagyu beef, Karen McMeekin. Sarah is very excited, is in studio. Dame Jenny Shipley and a Deer Velvet, among the things we're talking about next hour.
Man enough, moving on. No, there's a ticket with my name on it. No, there's a ticket with my name on it. Man enough, no, there's a ticket with my name on it. Man enough, no, there's a ticket with my name on it. Moving on.
7 minutes after 6, what a way to start the hour. Karen McMeekin joins us and is going to be with us throughout the next hour. That was
magic.
Yeah, magic. You got me. Yeah, that's yeah.
What do you think, Loey?
Yeah. I thought that was Hamish.
Yeah, thanks, Loey. There he is, laconic as ever. Karen, we're going to have a little chat with you and hear more from you over the next hour as well here. But first up, let's get into some rural news.
Rural news with Farm Source, your one source for better productivity this spring.
Dairy NZ, the Dairy Companies Association of New Zealand, and the Ministry for Primary Industries this week endorsed the Dairy Declaration of Rotterdam, marking New Zealand's commitment towards global sustainable dairy development. The declaration signals both a commitment towards feeding the world with safe and sustainable products and enhancing sustainability. We're pleased to endorse the declaration as a signal of strong support for the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and for the important role of the dairy sector in the global community's effort towards sustainable development, says Kimberly Cruther, Executive Director of DCANS. Cruther says the declaration highlights many areas where the dairy sector can support the achievement of its sustainable development goals from an economic, social, environmental and health perspective, which she says are all priorities for New Zealand. Invercargill-based Alliance Group has acquired Gold Kiwi Asia, a Singapore-based marketing and sales company, as the meat company seeks to capture more value from its markets in Asia. Chief Executive David Surveyor says the new business will be known as Alliance Asia. He says the acquisition represents an important step in the company's vision to create a stronger cooperative to benefit its 5,000 farmer shareholders and staff. This will ensure we are now closer than ever to our Asian customers and end consumers with our new Asian headquarters in Singapore, connecting us to some of the world's largest populations and their growing demand for quality food, surveyors says. Dairy NZ has developed an app called EnviroWalk, which it says will make it easier for farmers to assess their fertiliser use, effluent, waterways, races, cropping, water use and irrigation, and create an action plan on their smartphone. About 1,500 farmers have already downloaded the free app since it was launched in July. Dairy NZ's Adam Duker, who led the development of the app, says farmers are always looking for ways to improve their environment. We wanted to make it easy, as easy as possible for them. He says the app has a series of yes-no questions to help farmers identify areas on their farm that have opportunities to do things differently and get better environmental outcomes. Depending on the answers to the questions, the app suggests solutions or actions. These form the basis of the action plan, which can be downloaded, printed and updated at any time. And the pastoral sector is reacting to negative news reporting and comment rather than being proactive in talking about its vision for water quality in New Zealand, claims Beef and Lamb NZ chairman James Parsons. He says when you are always reacting, it is always coming across as defensive when you are trying to bat off accusations. Parsons was commenting on the thinking behind the Swimmable Rivers Pledge by farming leaders, including himself. He says what the pledge is about is talking to the public of New Zealand, not just the farming community, the majority of whom are aware of the great work going on to try and improve water quality. Parsons says the farmers' pledge was really to start having a dialogue with the public of New Zealand and let them hear farmers' vision, who he says are very much on the same page as the public of New Zealand. And that's your latest rural news. I'll be back with more in half an hour.
Rural News with Farm Source, your one source for better productivity this spring.
This is Rural Exchange, Rex Radio Live, right across the country. On the day we can't mention the war, a big event happening, but we're not allowed to talk about it at all. We can't do that. We won't do that. Although we can encourage you to go out and do a thing called voting today. Enough on that. Of course, Wagyu beef is achieving some of the highest premiums in the beef industry for its beautiful marbling, loved by consumers for its taste. And of course, Matt Crowther is the GM of Wagyu for First Light Foods. G'day, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
G'day.
Great to have you on the show. Tell us about the details. Let's start with the PGP, the Primary Growth Program, that is focused on marble beef and what effect that's having.
Yeah, we're 5 years into a seven-year program with the government, and that's targeting setting up a high-value beef export market into international markets. So we're enjoying premiums in the international markets that we can share back through the value chain with our farmers. And things have really taken off in the last 2 years. In terms of numbers, we've got about 20,000 Wagyu now around the country, and sourcing majority of our animals now from the dairy industry, utilising surplus calf resources there, crossed with Wagyu. So it's really starting to appeal with some farmers.
Matt, tell us the detail around how you're using Wagyu genetics in the dairy industry to be able to source quality over quantity in regards to the Wagyu bobby calves?
We've done research as part of the PGP program and identified the Kiwi cross, which now makes up about 50% of our national dairy herd, is a great cross bred with Wagyu. So we use full blood, 100% Wagyu genetics over the dairy industry, particularly Kiwi cross, although we can do Friesian. And that animal is marbling very well. We're suspecting it's the Jersey element in the dairy breed that's contributing to that marbling. So we've got a fantastic product out of the dairy industry.
When you're talking the Kiwi cross Wagyu, tell us about the nuts and bolts as far as the farmers are concerned. I suppose it's using that calf that would normally go to the bobby truck, but how are the rearers finding them as far as weight gain, etc., as far as food consumed to get them, for example, firstly to the 100K mark?
We find that the feedback we're getting from rearers is similar to Jerseys. They need a little bit of attention early on, not to be overfed, but their growth rates are good. They're happy with those. It's just that they're quite an inquisitive animal. They're a bit like, the feedback we get, they're a bit like deer. I was talking to a farm the other day that their daughter was in the field with a smoothie milkshake, and the Wagyu's come up around her, and she fed the smoothie to some of the Wagyu. So I've got a unique personality.
Okay, the next step then is post-weaning. How are you finding the finishes as far as dry matter consumed to product produced?
Our top farmers at the moment are finishing them in about 20 months. Our average is about 2.5 years, we're finding through the program. So Wagyu is, you know, they're known for their intramuscular fat, and so they need to be fed well, so that's a key point of difference. So it doesn't appeal to everyone. If you're accustomed to bull beef, follow-up type animals, then Wagyu's, you know, it's quite different. It's your premium class, like your blue chip and a share portfolio. So they need to be fed well through their whole life to determine the marbling, because we pay premiums on the marbling.
So the returns to those individual farmers are just as good as if they get a line of Hereford or Hereford Angus, therefore?
Yeah, well, our target is we're not connected to the commodity market, so what we're looking to establish is a long-term, stable premium return. So we're aiming for, on average, $2 above prime schedule. We're averaging about $1 at the moment, so that's our long-term plans. So it's stability, and we're finding farmers are, you know, some of them are sick of the commodity cycle up and down. They win some years, they lose the other. So it's starting to appeal to those types of farmers that are looking for stability so that they can budget and plan on that. And that's the space that we occupy.
We're talking to Matt Crowther, who's the GM of Wagyu for First Light Foods. Tell us about the markets that you are cracking with this, Matt.
So we've established markets in the UK, UAE and California. We see a lot of growth in California. That's where the grass-fed movement really emanates from. We're focused on 100% grass-fed, antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and that's a real movement in California that radiates around the world. So those are the three key markets we have at the moment, as well as New Zealand. So you'll see the products now in selected new worlds around the country.
Matt, in regards to pasture and achieving white fat versus yellow fat, so this whole debate around if it's white fat, it must be grain-fed. How are you finding that marketing challenge?
Well, ironically, that's kind of tipped on its head, because our consumers looking for indicators of 100% grass-fed, the yellow tinge that historically has been a negative for Jersey is actually a point of difference, and it confirms the grass-fed nature of the animal. So if it's bright white fat, that's generally a grain-fed animal.
It's interesting when the connection with fodder beet as well, and what that's doing to the fat colour. But in terms of what's the rest of the program and the co-funding with the Crown see for you in terms of R&D?
We were starting to get to the tail end of our on-farm research, so we're in the process now of summarising that research into fact sheets that we can disseminate with our farmers in terms of the Wagyu recipe, you know, what are the best things to feed these animals at what time during the year. We've also got to a point where our genetics investment, we're starting a genomics, which is basically selecting the best bulls for the dairy industry. So at the moment, we've got a very important partnership with LIC. So we select our best three bulls and send them to LIC. They look after all the semen collection up there and source the animals for us exclusively. And that's a very important part of the growth story.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
This one is from Patricia, and we've come back further north around Greaton, Tauranga. Patricia there has, the son has four dogs, two are rescue dogs, and I think that's a very good cause, actually. A whistle may be just what he needs for his sanity. There you go. So plenty of reaction to the Whistle and Pop dog whistle giveaway.
And if you want to buy one, because they're so beautiful as jewellery, and get them engraved.
It's an advert now.
Head to Young Rural Ladies, youngruralladies.co.nz. But hey, in terms of...
She'll be getting a cut, Hamish, don't worry.
Lowie, have you ever seen that I Run Dog starter pack on NZ Farming? Starter pack.
So what is that actually? Tell us about that. Actually, describe what that actually is. So visually we can see that for our online people, but for our radio listeners, tell me what that is.
Yes, and I'll put it on the Rex Facebook page as well so you can find it. But basically, you know, I Run Dogs is a pack of durries, RM Williams logo on the back of your chaps, collar up like Lowy, and of course a dog whistle. But
so that by sort of putting that pack together, you're like the guy that drives around with the fake golden retriever in the back of the Range Rover in Auckland with the shotgun, but you don't actually go duck shooting or chasing or hunting for anything. Is that what it is, basically?
No.
Or you actually do run dogs.
You do have a team of dogs.
Okay.
You are the real deal.
That makes you the real. I just thought it was like a fake pack you could have to impress people. You know?
Look, Kieran, when you were farming down south, you would have seen a few blokes looking like this.
Many a bloke looking like that.
We have Kieran McMeekin, of course, who is in with us in the studio. And, well, we're going to hear more from Kieran. Stunning start to the hour after the break. Dog names, too, by the way. Dog names, your favourite dogs. What was the favourite dog that you had on the farm?
Over the years.
What's, you know?
He wasn't very good at actually doing work, but he used to play basketball with me, and he had a name called Please. So when Dad was...
Okay, I've just quickly, I'm going to be really indulgent here. Loey, I want your dog names, but the best Mackay dogs were Rock, Dig and Teen. The worst were Tweed, Joe, Fan and Spag. But the worst of all, and this guy, he did all sorts of things. He was, and funnily enough, his name was Toss. So Toss Dog, he was a deviant. Unfortunately,
I've heard of one fella call his dog Kill. Kilroy.
Kilroy.
What about, yeah?
No, a couple of dogs, good, very, very good dogs I've had in the past. Yep. I'm one that tends to buy a more mature dog that can do the work for me. I went to this chap's place to buy a couple of hunterways he had. One was a black and tan, and the other one was sort of a grey, grizzly, sort of half beardy thing. And they're two good dogs. And I said, and so what are their names? Black and Tan was Buck. He was a very good dog. But when I got him home, the neighbours thought I was swearing at him all the time. The Norwest was playing. But the other one, quite interesting, big, half-beardy, sort of grizzly grey-looking bugger. His name was Grizz.
Oh, Grizz. Like Wiley.
So, yeah, like the uncle. But uncle. The other dogs I've had... I don't know why how people name dogs. I had a very good hitting dog called Bruce.
Yeah, good strong
Bruce.
Name.
Bruce.
My dog at the moment, he's a damn good dog, but he's Chopper.
Chopper. Quite like Chopper. My grandfather had a dog called Fanny, and that kind of affected me at 10 years of age. I couldn't quite work out what that was all about, that my decent, God-fearing Presbyterian grandfather had a dog called Fanny. Anyway,
Did you ever find out why?
No, I didn't find out why. No, I didn't. Some things we can't talk about on the show, including a certain big event happening today. Get your vote in when we come back. Kieran McMeekin with us on the show. 6:22 on Rex.
Don't stop. Give me that feeling. Give me that feeling. Give me that feeling. Don't stop. Give me that feeling. No. I don't wanna let that feeling go. Don't stop, give me that feeling, give me that feeling, give me that feeling.
Kieran McMeekin is in studio with us live. We've got the whole squad, actually, Rural News. Richard is here, Hamish Mackay, Sarah Perriam, Richard Lowe down south. Kieran, great to have you here today and in studio. Outstanding. Look, give us a little bit of a background on the... And obviously, you're from a rural background. Farming's in the blood, but give us your journey so far.
Yeah. G'day, everybody. so I grew up in Arrowtown, Dunedin, and used to spend a bit of time with the latter family down in Aweka, growing up through high school, working on the farm, and ended up going back there when I was about 20, 21, worked on the farm. And this was like pre-music. This was kind of when I was in that sort of
transitional zone
where you have no idea what's going on.
Not as in a Bruce Jenner transitional zone, but a transitional zone.
Exactly. And ended up going back to the farm then and working for a bit and got some very wise advice from a Mr. Latter who said, just mate, he was talking about music journey. He said, mate, just go and get on with it.
Follow your dream.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you're enjoying the journey? You're loving it?
Absolutely loving it.
Yeah, okay, so in terms of somebody who wants to listen to you, hear you, where can they check you out and what's coming up? What's on sort of ahead of...
Yeah, I think Spotify is probably the best place. Everyone's on Spotify at the moment.
Yeah.
So I've just released a new album in August, and so that's up there. Just finished a tour, and I'm just about to announce, this is a secret, but just about to announce
secret on Radio Life. Yeah,
just for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm just about to announce a tour coming up in summer, 20-day tour around the country. So, yeah, that's
north and south.
North and south. Yeah,
awesome.
Going all the way down to Dunedin.
Oh, back to your stomping ground.
Back to the stomping ground.
When I was based in Dunedin, I used to go around on a Friday to the Brew Bar and the Octagon. Most people down south know where that is. And Kieran would play every Friday night sitting on a chair, and to be able to follow his journey all the way through is pretty awesome. Not many people take advice from John Ladder, but actually probably the smartest one too. It's quite cool. You know,
I'll tell you what, John Ladder sounds really grounded to me, to get on with your journey and follow your dream, and enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly what I need to hear. The right time.
Good. Because you've had some awesome opportunities as well in terms of big stages that you've performed on, such as Dixie Chicks opening for them and singing with Kaylee Bell. 20,000 people. What was that like?
Yeah, pretty awesome. That was a real dream.
That was huge. You know, so just to see where do you want to go? What would be your ultimate?
Yeah. Well, I've set a goal of being the next New Zealand artist to win a Grammy Award.
Good man.
Yeah, I mean, I want to just push it as far as I can. You know, the dream is to sell out big rooms around the world, you know, and go travelling, meet people, and just...
Will you remember us in this?
Oh, of course I will.
Cool.
This is going to be right up there.
hey, Sarah Perry, the Grammy after party.
No. You know that $1 million we were talking about last week? That'll be us. Lowy.
Exactly.
But in terms of, there's another similar story I heard from an Australian artist. I'm not sure if it's James Rain or James Blundell. Very similar in that he was on the farm and he was told to, rake the hay, but he actually went raked it all together in one massive pile rather than lines.
Mm.
And he's sitting there on his old porch swing, you know, in Australia, singing away. And the old mate comes over and he's like, I think you should follow your career. You're not so flash at farming.
Well, I have to jump in there because there's a farmer called Action Jackson, and if he's listening, I'm so sorry because I crashed his tractor and mower into a fence and cost him quite a lot of money. So I'm sorry, Action.
But what was the story you told him?
What do you mean?
You know, when you crashed the tractor, what was your excuse?
No, mate, I'm a straight shooter. I said, mate, I'm so sorry. I've crashed your tractor into a fence over the radio, and he came in and gave me a right bollocking.
Explosive words were
He had that kind of steam coming out of his ears, but he kept that calm. And he was sort of like, it's okay. It's okay.
It's a bit like you, Lowy, when one of the children played up. Steam out the ears, but you just keep your calm, steely exterior. Your blue steel.
That caused me. Normally it was the dogs not doing as I thought they should.
Yeah.
I'll get you a whistle.
Occasionally. Righty-ho. We're going to hear more from Kieran McMeekin coming up over the rest of the hour here. Yeah, that Grammy after party, we are looking forward to that. I want to ask you a question, actually, Kieran. Have you ever heard of a band, and these guys were huge in the early 80s, and Sarah Perham, you're not allowed to laugh at the name, but these guys were farmers from Tai Happy, and they had all done their OE, came back to the farm, formed a band sort of fresh out of the post, sort of kind of like punk new wave era out of the late 70s, early 80s, and formed a band who were very successful on the student circuit called Daggy and the Dickheads out of Tai Happy. Quite seriously, these guys were good. Mm. They came to Auckland in the end. There were no sheep to shear, no fences to mend, and it kind of all died a natural death. But these guys, the Kennedy brothers, the Mickelsons, they were superb. In fact, I'm going to get Grades to pull up one of their songs before the end of the hour because I want Kieran to have a little listen. But mate, we're so looking forward to being part of your journey. It's so good to have you here, and we're going to hear more from you.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Right, Dame Jenny Shipley, former Prime Minister and Chair of Genesis Energy since 2009, joins us in the studio. Welcome, Dame Jenny. Nice
Good
to have
morning.
You here.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Look, we're going to discuss the changing landscape of energy use and how the company focuses on the future, which is going to look, I gather, very different from how energy is currently produced and distributed. Can you explain what are the biggest issues coming for energy?
Well, look, water and the use of water for electricity companies or farming, and as a rural girl and an ex-Ashburtonian with my political career, how we use water is a huge strategic advantage in New Zealand. And from Genesis Energy's point of view, we think about how we produce energy and then how we move it toward our customers. It's effectively generating electrons, so we use water to do that. And then how do we get it to whether they're rural customers who want to pull deep water wells to the surface and utilise that water, or right through to a mother who wants to know when the hot water's being consumed, and if she had better information, could she say to the kids, you know, shorter showers or shower later? Because actually variable pricing will come tomorrow because of technology. What we're trying to do is stand in the shoes of either the farming customer or the mum with the kids and say, how can we deliver energy in a way that they get value? Clearly we get value by presenting it in a way that's meaningful, but it's a service rather than a production issue. The days of just lines companies and and building another dam are yesterday's story. How you use that energy and how you capture energy on the roof and put it in a battery, and that battery is like another power station. These are the ideas of the future, and Genesis is in a leading position, which I'm very proud of.
What type of technologies are you working on for farmers like Lowy to become little mini power stations and feed back to the grid, and Genesis being a part of that process?
It's interesting. The farming community are huge users of electricity in certain parts of New Zealand, and irrigation's a key area. In the future, there are very likely with battery technologies, particularly for remote farmers, to be able to capture and use their energy grid themselves. But there's also, as batteries come down, whether they're farming communities and big users, they'll have battery banks. You want to pull on those maybe in the summer, but in the winter you may not have high demand for them, but you are part of then a network of power stations. So people are forgetting that we don't need to dam another river, because the new technologies, even though it's what we call distributed, if you invest, you can then use, but we may well say, well, you've got this. When you're not using it, we'll buy it back from you. So people will invest knowing that it's not just their farm, but potentially their farm to cover peak use, and you might be able to use it at a cheaper rate. But then we might have a buyback agreement. So there's a lot of big ideas where capital and the utilisation of energy on a revenue basis may be relevant to the agricultural community.
Over the past decade, things have changed a fair bit on that buyback, because I'm off the grid at home. I've got a turbine and solar with a generator backup. When we first put it all in, I think it was nearly dollar for dollar, and it was going to cost 100 and something to get it from over
that's
there.
Thousand.
But now
it's much lower.
It's much, much lower, and it's not worth the pushback, is it?
I think it's a scale issue. Yeah. You know, when they so people thought, gosh, I've got this, and this is how much energy costs, and I'll sell it back at the price that I buy it. In the end, we look at our power stations, and then we'll look at a grid of batteries, and we have to look at them like for like, and how we get them to our customers. So it's not only how much you think you deserve, but how much in the consolidation. When there are far more batteries and people like you off the grid, then that compared with us investing in another gas peaker, that we can still do the math and make the electricity, not only you capture it, but us move it to where our customers are. We can only pay you not only for your capturing it, but what it then costs in the consolidation. And that's why the price has come down. Yes. My own opinion is the price will come up because you are effectively replacing capital and annual costs of moving electricity, but there's not sufficient of you to justify a one-for-one today.
You mentioned batteries, and I know myself they've come a long, long way in the last decade, and they're at least twice, maybe three times better than they were a decade.
And they'll get better again probably in the next 2 years. So what took five is now taking two. What's now taking two will be literally months.
Who do you put that down to?
Oh, it's just brilliant minds all around the world.
And competition?
Yes, but also innovation. And in New Zealand, we can't really, because we don't have either capital or scale to be the innovator. So we have to be a fast follower. We watch battery development all around the world. And we're designing our system so as soon as they are scalable and available, We're running a trial in Wairarapa where we're working with families and putting all this technology in, sharing the costs so we both learn together. And as we learn together, the minute these batteries are down, we can just scale this. So we're looking at it as serving you, but also avoiding another dam in a river, because we're going to use technology tomorrow.
Over your time, you know, you've been a chef for 8 years, and you've seen a lot of development in your previous role as a politician and former prime minister. Why are you so interested in the energy space and stay in that from what you've seen in your time in government?
It's completely fascinating. And I almost have been around, dare I say it, you know, longevity gives you a perspective that's quite unique. So we broke up ECNZ, a monopoly, and four companies, sold Contact and kept three. Then the current government in 2008 decided to partially sell down. So Genesis Energy is held by the government 51%, and then mums and dads in New Zealand hold the other shares. You might be interested to know that when it was 100% owned by the government in 2008, we paid a $39 million dividend to the government. This year, the dividends Genesis Energy will produce are around $160 million, half of which goes to the government. So owning 51%, they are going to get over $70 million in dividends. When they owned all of it, they got 39.
Yeah.
Now, that's a listed company performing well, and the government has had a win-win. They've got directors who are professional directors running the company in the interests of all shareholders, and you as taxpayers are the beneficiaries of the fact that these companies are now really thinking about the future.
Dame Jenny, I just want to ask about your rural roots, your connection to the land on a whole.
Well, I married a drop-dead gorgeous guy 4 years ago. That's a long time, isn't
that
it?
And
to be honest, he's still lovely. We're you know, he's special. He and his family had farmed in Canterbury for many, many years, and we married young and farmed for many years prior to my going into politics. My own family, interestingly, were tobacco farmers.
Right.
And as a rather a quirk of history, when I was health minister, I think I took off the last of the 100% subsidies, and some of my relatives in Motueka, I don't think ever quite forgave me. But so that history of agriculture in both my mother's family and in my husband's family are very strong. And frankly, it's still an engine room for the New Zealand economy. And as far as I can see, you know, doing things well here to serve customers everywhere is part of our success historically, and it most certainly will be in the future. And I'm proud of my connection there.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Right in the same wavelength. Everything you say just makes sense. I don't need to worry, 'cause baby, I know that you got my back. We're right in the same wavelength.
Radio Live, Rural Exchange. Well, Hawke's Bay-based Deer Velvet Company, Jivar, is celebrating exporting its velvet supplements into China and the US. Now, Hawke's Bay farmer Josh Buckman saw the untapped potential of this business, took it over in 2015. Not only is this an innovative health supplement company charging into some new markets, sales have spiked with the launch of a new velvet pet health supplement. Give us the background to that, Josh. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Hamish. There is a good background to this story. We've been working on it since 1990 with the original owners. The pet product itself came about as we had consistent feedback from customers. They were feeding their human supplement to their working dogs just to get that extended life from them, and, you know, had really good results. What we wanted was something specific, more cost-effective, and targeted at a dog, so a chewable tablet that they just slap out of your hands. You really do have to hide the bottle once they get onto it. It gets them going all right.
It's a bit like Lowy at home.
I was going to say,
you've got to hide the bottle.
No, Josh.
Put a horn on a jellyfish.
In regards to the main minerals and things that velvet, or the property, health properties that velvet has, could you run us through that and how it translates to dogs and pets in general?
Devo, it is quite a unique supplement when you look at it. There's over 300 individual components you can measure in deer velvet, and as a supplement, you know, consistent feedback, industry research has shown us that taken consistently, it will it'll pick up on deficiencies in your diet. So if you take your working dogs, for example, might be out the back box of Otago next to Udo, somewhere around there, fed slabs of merino, they really, you know, they could be deficient in whatever, you know, that animal was deficient in. So the deer velvet works basically as a supplement, as it's stated, and it will pick up on any of those deficiencies. And as you know, when your diet's right, you know, your health's better, you can perform better, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what it's done for humans. And in China for, you know, a couple of thousand years, when I was over there, they brought out the scrolls and really gave me a set to on the story.
How challenging is that Chinese market for Jiva?
The initial, the culture difference and the understanding of probably New Zealand initially and the English language was the biggest one. I talked to, I'd hate to think, I came from a sales background in insurance, so I was used to hearing no. And I've got a couple of young children, so, you know, it didn't bother me at all. So I probably made a couple of hundred phone calls, and I came across, you know, a business that was about to launch. They own the shopping channel and the golf channel over there, and we're mainly looking for Australian products because in China, you know, there's a perception that we've got the best food in the world, but if no one knows about it, like, what do we have? I found most people didn't even know what New Zealand, where it was, etc. So challenging to start with. Once we're in there and trust was built, and we got these guys out to Queenstown and flew them down to a pretty special property in Mike Wilkins' family farm and showed them around the properties there. Obviously me getting over to China, sitting with them, eating some pretty special food and doing the whole palaver. Once that trust is there, then, you know, you slowly build from there. They're long-term thinkers is what I found.
How are you going in terms of supply and what premiums are available to potential suppliers?
The supply side of the deer velvet, obviously it's a seasonal product, but there's around 600 tonnes produced in New Zealand and we're only just starting this sort of export game. So supply is not an issue. Consistent quality and, you know, the right type of people for a business like this, that the story starts with the guys who get up at 5 a.m., put their John Balls on and get out there and do it every day. You know, that's something pretty special. So we like to work with people that are keen to support that story. They're keen to have people out on their farm. They're proud of what they do. You know, the likes of Grant and Sally Charteris, Hawke's Bay Farmer of the Years, they've really got them behind us.
Yeah, so... Give me the background to the name. I'm interested in Jiva. Where did that come from?
So Jiva comes from the founders, Clint and Shelley Thompson, no P in that name, which is has Danish roots. So Jiva is Danish for antler.
There you go.
Traditionally used by the Viking warriors.
That's cool.
All fired up.
So we've spoken about the velvet, what you do with that. Sure. Do you enter into any other parts of the deer's anatomy, sinews, tails, etc.?
No, we don't, Richard. Jiva is, you know, it was started in 1990 and it was based around deer velvet. I think once you start diversifying away from your core, which in our case is the deer velvet, and trying to tell that story properly, I don't know if we've done that quite right yet. So we really focus on the renewable side of it, which in China doesn't mean anything. They just want it. They just want the whole thing. But I've, you know, as we've worked at it and we've pitched our product at that greener, renewable side of it, we're starting to get some traction, I think.
Radio Live Rural Exchange.
Okay, 6:51, 9 minutes away from 7. Don't forget to do what you've got to do today. We can't actually talk about it. Been a really enjoyable show. We've still got one more song to come out from Kieran McMeekin before we wrap up the hour. But, of course, your last chance to win the dog whistle. Text to 3920, your name, the word dog, and your address, and a little story if you want to as well. That's to win
Now, this is the Whistle and Pop Cirriparium, isn't it?
Dog whistle.
Beautiful, beautiful piece of, well, jewellery too, but
it is. It's also limited edition sterling silver valued at $250.
Oh, there we go. The price has gone up by $50 over the course of the show, Louie.
Sarah?
Okay.
You forgot to add on your commission to all the other sales.
Did you forget to turn your mic on again?
Daylight savings, guys. Daylight savings. Spring forward, fall back. It's pretty easy. Spring forward, fall back. And so put your clock forward an hour, which means we'll be up at the very sprightly time tomorrow morning. And election coverage tonight, Radio Live, will have Mark Sainsbury.
Perhaps we should get someone to give Sarah a phone call, maybe Bob or someone to remind her.
Well, because given that you and I are both, we're both sitting on zero, a strike rate of zero, in terms of fail to present at correct time in the morning. And what's Sarah on two?
Two. One.
Well, just one.
She's 100%.
Just one. Okay. Right, quick break, and when we come back, more from Kieran McMeekin. It is coming up to 5 minutes away from 7 o'clock, wrapping up our show this morning. Rural Exchange right across the country, 5 till 7, Saturday and Sunday morning. We do it here. It's called Rex. Okay, we've got one more text in from Mandy in Whangamata on the Tairua Road there, and is pretty keen. She has got to be a great present for the boss and his two Springer Spaniels. Thank you, Mandy. Gee, we've had a great run on that this morning.
I had a naughty Springer Spaniel once. It was a girl, and her name was Keith.
That really says something about you more than Keith, your Springer Spaniel. I am quite sure of that. Keith, that is just, that is a very high way to go out on the show this morning. Well, he's been with us today, and it's been really great to have you here, Kieran McMeekin, and Luke's Kitchen, Katoona, 8th of January.
8th of January, I'll see you there.
Yeah, I'm going to be there for that. And you've got about 20 dates across the country over the summer.
Yeah, coming south. We're coming just talking, I might do a show in Cromwell. We're going to do a show in Cromwell.
In Bob's Vineyard.
Bob's Vineyard.
Bob's Vineyard.
Yeah, and we're going to the wine cave. Yeah.
Louie, you're all set for this? You're all set? You'll be all primed 8th of January? Oh, no, somewhere around January now.
Somewhere in Canterbury for Louie.
Where will Louie be? Yeah.
Canterbury, Christchurch.
This fella, Bob, sure that's not your mother.
Yeah, well, the Springer Spaniel called Keith. It's no surprise that your mother.
And my mother called Bob.
My mother was called Bob. Okay, what are we going to go out on here, Kieran?
We're going to go out on a song called Spanish Steps.
Spanish Steps.
Yeah.
It's my favourite.
Oh, it's Sarah's favourite. Oh, she's just about to melt. Thank you, young man. It's been great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
There's a place that I once heard about, in a story that was read to me out loud. A land of make-believers, so it seemed. Took me to a place of hopes and dreams. Turned my back to my homeland, never looked over my shoulder. And I heard my mother say, you lost something along the way. How long does it take to get so wrong? When you're standing on the other side of the globe. 'Cause even if it takes a lifetime, I swear that I'd still go. When I climb those Spanish steps, I let you know. Spanish steps, I'll let you know.
Radio Live's Rural Exchange. Thanks to Carter's Tire Service.